This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast Friday. Tom Rich and Brandy having a look at a lot of numbers and what might be on the cards or not for getting a flight for Eid. Let's start with the numbers. Rumours coming out of the US that there might be no rate cuts. Rich, Tom, myself, or mortgage holders not liking that in the slightest. So we've been digging into that in some depth. Speaking of banks and speaking of lending money, Emirates Development Bank, which has a mandate to lend 30 billion dirhams to support the diversification of the UAE economy, has got through over 10 billion dirhams of it. We've been speaking to the CEO, His Excellency Ahmed Mohammed Al Nakbi, about what the plans are and indeed the timescale for the remaining 20-odd billion. And if you are a company that is looking to expand, manufacture, etc., he gives some very good advice at the end of that interview about how you could possibly end up benefiting from what Emirates Development Bank is doing. Wizz Air, that's who Tom's been speaking to this morning, the managing director, to find out whether there are any seats left to go anywhere for Eid and how much they might cost you. And Richard's been digging into whether solutions for problems at the House of Mouse, Disney, might involve Apple. He's been speaking to one New York media pundit about its options. Oh, we're talking lending and interest rates this morning, and a deal that probably wouldn't require any lending at all, given that Apple is sitting on more cash than most countries at the moment. Where to start? Let's start with those interest rate rumours, something deliberately uncheerful to get you in the mood for the weekend.
Yeah, so it's Neel Kashkari. So it's more than just a rumour, because he's with the Federal Reserve of Minneapolis and he's part of the Fed Rate Setting Committee. And he gave an interview yesterday and it was a really obscure one. It was with an investment company whose name I forget, wasn't a big investment bank. And they did a kind of LinkedIn Q&A. And normally you get kind of bland generalities. Well, the Fed will be data dependent, blah, blah, blah. And he said all of that. But this quote in particular has got people talking. This is he, Neel Kashkari, when he was asked about what's going to happen to rates this year. And he gave quite a firm indication that there might be no cuts at all.
Every 3 months, we have to submit our summary of economic projections. In March, I had jotted down 2 rate cuts this year. Okay. If inflation continues to fall back towards our 2% target. But if we continue to see inflation moving sideways, then that would make me question whether we needed to do those rate cuts at all.
So if you've borrowed money here in the UAE, that matters, because, of course, our interest rates follow their interest rates because of the dollar peg. We wanted to get some perspective on this from Dan Richards. How scared should borrowers like me be about these comments? He's senior economist, Emirates MBD. This is what Dan had to say.
All eyes will be on the US NFP labour market report, which is due out later this afternoon. And this tells us how many jobs have been added in the US economy over the past month. And it's probably about the most closely followed regular data point there is. Now, ahead of its release, Neel Kashkari, Fed Bank of Minneapolis president, has said that if jobs and growth data continues to come in strong, we could end up seeing no rate cuts from the Fed this year at all. And looking at the data this week, we've already seen the JOLTS job openings and the ADP employment figures come in hotter than expected, so there's a fair chance the NFP outperforms this week as well. That being said, though, Kashkari is a renowned hawk, and crucially, he's not a voting member on the FOMC at present. And some of the messages from other voting members has been a bit more nuanced. Our expectation remains that there will be 3 rate cuts this year. And while there is mounting risk to this view from strong jobs and stubborn inflation data, and we may well end up having 2 cuts rather than 3, the chances that the Fed does not cut at all are really pretty slim.
So crumbs of comfort there from Dan. He does expect rate cuts. And as you mentioned, Neel Kashkari, he's a member of the Federal Open Market Committee, but they have this weird rotating voting right. So there's 18 of them, but at any given time, only 12 of them get to vote. And Neil's not in a kind of voting phase at the moment. Others like Loretta Mester overnight have been making slightly more dovish sounds about, yeah, we probably are getting close to the point of cutting interest rates. But nevertheless, it's spooked the markets. Dow, all of Wall Street down by well over 1% last night. Nikkei in Tokyo down by 2%. And the punters are blaming those comments from Kashkari.
All right, speaking of interest rates, or speaking of lending, rather, let me put it another way. We've got a really great interview. If I do say so myself, I probably shouldn't say that. With the CEO of Emirates Development Bank. He was good. He was great. Ahmed Mohamed Al Nakbi is the CEO there. They've got 30 billion dirhams, not to give away, but to lend in various ways, from trade financing to project financing to supply chain financing, in order to grow the non-oil economy, but particularly the industrial sector. We're going to hear from him a little bit later on. They've distributed over a third of that, and he reckons that the speed at which they're going to distribute the next just under 20 billion dirhams is going to be much, much faster. I think he said about 7.5, and you'll hear the exact number morning, is going to be this year alone. So if you do need to build a factory, particularly because that's where a lot of the money so far has gone to, greenfield and brownfield investment, trying to up the industrial and the manufacturing sector, particularly in the F&B, the renewables, and the healthcare spaces here in the UAE. These are the sectors we want to grow. We know that from that ADQ discussion that we had a little bit later on, didn't we, about what we jokingly called their life sciences supergroup, but putting together a number of wellness, longevity companies that ADQ has bought, pharma, the delivery of pharma, things like syringes and the rest of it, and rumours about whether that could be another Pure Health style IPO. It all ties in.
Pieces of the jigsaw.
Pieces of the jigsaw.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We are going to be discussing a lot of zeros that are being put to good use with the guys from Emirates Development Bank. It has a mandate to support key industrial sectors in the UAE by providing 30 billion dirhams worth of financing, and it is a third of the way, more than a third of the way, through that. Very pleased to be joined this morning by the CEO, His Excellency Ahmed Mohamed Al Nakbi. It's lovely to speak to you. Good morning.
Good morning.
So before we get into the numbers, remind me first about the mandate, about your strategy, what you've been asked to do.
So the mandate is pretty simple. It's straightforward. What we're doing is we are financing 30 billion dirhams worth of projects by 2026 in five key sectors: manufacturing, food security, advanced technology, healthcare, and renewables. This is in line with the government's focus on non-oil sectors, essentially the diversity in our economy.
And more than a third of that, 10.4 billion dirhams, has been distributed. What can you tell me about the way in which that money has been lent out, the type of financing that's been involved?
So a lot of it is what we call greenfield and brownfield CapEx financing. So it's specifically for new projects, typically factories, in one of those five key sectors. We work through partnerships. So we work with the Departments of Economic Development, the Chambers of Commerce, the Free Zones, all the different players in the ecosystem in the UAE, in the development ecosystem in the UAE. Our partners look at us as their key engine for financing, and their strategic partner for financing. And we work with them to get directly to these projects and these business owners in order for us to finance these projects.
And the breakdown between SMEs and more established companies is really interesting. Huge surges over the last year or so in the amount that has gone in both areas. But larger corporations taking the majority of that. Talk to me about your strategy.
Right. So as a number of companies, we actually, if we talk about the financing over the last 5 years, larger companies have taken, so what we consider large caps, have taken 5% of that financing over the last 3 years as a number of companies. 95% of the companies that we have financed have been in the SME sector. Again, it's a broad range. So we support everyone from your startups all the way up to your large corporates. What we look at is the economic impact and value to the economy of the UAE. We have economic impact scoring. So as a bank, we don't just do credit underwriting, but we actually do economic impact scoring alongside our credit underwriting to ensure that we have the highest value for the financing that we do.
However, the amount that's gone out to SMEs, I'm looking here at the figures, 3.4 billion dirhams, is a bit less than the larger corporate loans of 5.5 billion. Is it that the ticket size is larger for the larger companies?
Yeah, absolutely. So larger companies typically have larger balance sheets. They're capable of handling larger debt. SMEs will typically be smaller tickets. That's absolutely correct.
So what happens next? That's, we'll call it roughly a third of the money being distributed, doing exactly what you've been set up to do. How do you see the time frame, for example, for the other 20 billion? Are you on track?
Yes, absolutely. So this first 10.5 billion dirhams has been financed while we were setting up and establishing the bank. This strategy was launched in April of 2021. We're at our three-year milestone now. And I'm very, very proud to say that the organization has been built up. We have a proper development bank with a corporate commercial bank. And in the meantime, we had managed to get 10.5 billion out the door in financing. So that's only going to be accelerated this year and the year after. We expect a little over 7.5 billion to be done in 2024 alone. So that's almost doubling that figure in a matter of a year. And that number is only going to get accelerated from now till 2026.
What about the areas that it goes to? You've mentioned there that factories have taken a big chunk. Almost half of the finance has gone to manufacturing. But that's just one of the five areas that you're looking at. Do you expect to see that spread changing?
Not necessarily. So again, we are very much focused on the industrialization of the country. And so manufacturing will definitely always be the lion's share. And as you rightly pointed out, it's about 50% over the last 3 years. Keep in mind that when we say manufacturing, that does also include manufacturing of items for the food security sector and items for so whether it's food processing and, you know, food packaging and so on, and then items for the healthcare sector as well. So whether that's pharmaceuticals or pharmaceutical equipment, that all is also rolled up under manufacturing. Renewables has been something that's been very big and very heavily focused for us over the past year. So we have about 20% over the last 3 years has been given to renewables. And we expect that to definitely gain more traction going into now 2024 and 2025. And then the other key area of focus that we really, really are trying everything we can to support is, again, the food security, but specifically the agri-tech sector. We believe the agri-tech sector of the UAE is primed to boom, and that's an area that we're heavily focused on.
How do you make sure, we were having this discussion earlier, and you've mentioned underwriting yourself, that the heart doesn't rule the head on this? SMEs, there's always a certain amount of risks with new projects. How do you, as a bank, make sure that where you are financing is our areas that are going to stay the course?
So, again, we do credit underwriting just like a commercial bank would do, in the sense of ensuring that there's all the right, you know, audited financials, the feasibility studies, all of these things are in place. But what differentiates us is that we then look at the economic impact of the project. So whether it's an SME or a large corporate, for us, we have a certain risk threshold, risk appetite that we take on our balance sheet. We balance that, so we ensure that, you know, we're taking the right amount of risk against what we are projecting for our income revenue over the next 3 to 5 years. And we ensure that the bank is sustainable. We balance between rapid deployment, economic impact, and then risk management of our balance sheet.
Okay, 40 seconds left with you. The late, great Malcolm Taylor, whenever we were discussing EDB, always wanted to know, how do organisations get a chunk of this money? How does it work?
So quite simply, you can go to our website, go to edb.gov.ae. There's applications forms. It's our new website, by the way, so it's just been recently revamped and launched just, I think, about a month and a half ago. You can go there, you can fill out any of the e-forms, you will receive a call back. So our e-forms are active, they're linked directly to our call center. You can also call our call center directly, and then they, of course, will generate a referral directly to one of our relationship managers who will contact you. But again, just to make sure that the right people are the ones who are calling and requesting this support, you have to be a company that has audited financials, you have to be a company that has a feasibility study for your project. This is not the government just giving money to anybody that walks in through the door. These are real projects, sustainable projects, like what you had just asked a minute or two ago. We ensure that these projects are things that can be executed against and sustainable for the future, for the bank's sustainability of the future.
The CEO of Emirates Development Bank, Ahmed Mohammed Al-Nakbi, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Talking of currencies, you might well be changing a little bit of foreign currency over the course of the next couple of days, because if you haven't got away already, you might well have plans to do so. We have noticed a significant change on the roads of the UAE. A lot of suggestions coming through from a number of our sources here, be that Dubai airports, be it the airlines, that things is busy in and out of Dubai, out of Abu Dhabi and out of the UAE over the course of the next week or so, with good reason. A long Eid break being bookended by a couple of weekends as well. And that's why people are taking advantage of that. Are people taking advantage of it? And to what extent? Let's find out now as we dip into those Eid booking trends with the Managing Director of Wizz Air Abu Dhabi, Johan Eidegen, joining us now live from the nation's capital. Johan, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much indeed for joining us on the Business Breakfast.
Thanks for having me.
Eid booking trends then. What's it looking like for the team at Wizz Air Abu Dhabi?
Today, it's full. This is the busiest day of the year. Things are going crazy right now. So right now, we're just focused. The first flights went out this morning. All were fully booked. There's still tons of flights available, options if you still want to get out for a last-minute booking. But it's looking quite a busy Eid.
And has it been last-minute, Johan, this year? Or have people, given the fact that a lot of people have known that this would be a significant Eid break, have people been booking in advance?
I think the smart bargain hunters are the ones that are booking in advance. We see a trend that it's definitely people are improving. I mean, if you want to save and if you want to get away to the right destinations, you should really be ahead of time. You shouldn't wait until the last minute. Still, of course, not everybody can, so there are flights available. But if you really want to save bargains, I think people are getting better. Still, I would say that the trend here is, compared to maybe Europe and the US, is that people are still booking a little bit more last minute. But if you really want to get good fares, then you should really be out more than 30 days in advance, preferably 2 to 3 months even.
Yeah, it's not like people were forewarned. It's interesting, is it? There is still that lastminute.com sort of mentality across. Have you noticed any difference in terms of numbers, in terms of when people are booking from previous years? Are there any changes this year?
No, I think you can see, definitely, we can see already that May is very well booked already. June is starting to book very nicely. So comparing to last year and the previous year, definitely, people are much more coming out and booking earlier. I think there was also a hangover from COVID times when people were uncertain what's going to apply and what's going to be available. So now people have gotten back into the mode of starting to plan long term what their holiday season and their trips are going to look like.
As you mentioned, things full today. Things are also looking busy in the coming days as well. Where are people going?
So we fly 39 destinations, so it's a mix and match. Right now, everything's full. But of course, places like the Maldives have been very popular this year. Even short booking, Salalah has been doing very well. Rome, Vienna, Hungary are doing very well. Athens in Greece. So it's a mix and match. But of course, you know, with such a long break ahead of us, people are taking the opportunity not only to go for a short-term, short weekend break, but actually take a long, long, well-deserved break for longer destinations.
Obviously, this is the first big sort of significant holiday for all in 2024. Mm-hmm. Looking back to 2023, obviously a record-breaking year for you, doubling capacity, carrying 3 mm-hmm. million passengers as well. What's the first quarter of 2024 look like?
The first quarter of 2024, we continue the same trend. We're still almost doubling year on year. We'll continue this trend over next year. I wouldn't say we're going to double, but definitely we're going to have very strong double digits growth still ahead of us. So we see that load factors are improving and increasing as well throughout the year. So we can see that there's still plenty of demand for low fares in the market.
You launched 8 exciting destinations last year. Can we expect more destinations this year?
There will be some. We're currently negotiating and looking at what's out there. Actually, I think that we can see that there's a lot of competition amongst the destinations to provide new tourism routes. So we're currently looking at what we can access. But at the same time, I think what we can see is that a lot of our destinations also need an improved frequency on top of it. So apart from also trying to find the right new destinations, we're also adding a lot more capacity to our current destinations to make them even more attractive and easier to travel with.
And with the trend for more and more residents looking towards cost-friendly affordable flying as well, I know you made the pledge at the end of last year to keep your airfares low throughout 2024. Is that still practical at the moment, given the pressures?
No, of course. I mean, we're still building a market, so providing low fares and high value is what consumers are looking at. That's definitely within our business model. So what we do with everything is to become more cost effective and become more spread our costs across a larger base. And that helps consumers access lower fares. So we continue to think that the fares in this market have been too high for too long. And therefore, our purpose of being here is to be able to provide more low cost destinations to people living in the UAE.
Looking forward to it throughout the year. Final question from me to you, Johan. Does the boss of the second largest carrier in Abu Dhabi get to get away for Eid, or is it work, work, work?
I'm actually staying here. It's quite exciting for us. I'm coming out of a very slow period during Ramadan. Eid is actually one of the most fun periods for us. So I'm going to take some time off, but I'll definitely be here and enjoy also seeing all the people who get a chance to travel with us.
Well, enjoy it, whatever you're up to. Johan, thanks so much indeed for joining us. The Managing Director of Wizz Air Abu Dhabi, joining us live here on The Business Breakfast.
Just the highlights. This is The Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Talking media now, Disney has won its bitter shareholder battle against billionaire Nelson Peltz. But what's next for Disney? Here's the media professor, Evan Shapiro.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of critiques to be made, you know, and actually the board invited him in and Trine and his company to come in and make a presentation about, all right, so what are the strategic things you would do? And there was nothing there. So I just think, you know, Peltz was not really presenting a great alternative to Iger, you know, who then also was able to get pretty much every major institutional investor, all the major, you know, Steve Jobs's widow, George Lucas, but also, you know, Goldman Sachs and everybody else to endorse him. So I didn't think Peltz was really made out to win this. That said, I do think the lack of a clear successor for Iger, you know, he's a septuagenarian, you know, who's, I think, kind of sharpest days as a mogul are behind him. You know, Disney is not necessarily headed, the stock is the same exact price it was a decade ago. So, you know, I don't think the things that are dogging Iger are going to go away just because Peltz lost this vote.
So if Nelson Peltz isn't the solution and maybe Bob Iger isn't the solution, what is, would you say? You talked about Epic Games there and buying a stake in the company that makes the Fortnite video game. Is that a game changer or just an incremental change?
I mean, they bought 5% of the company and I think, you know, I think Fortnite is a really good environment for things like Star Wars and the Avengers and the Marvel franchise. You know, I would have loved to have seen them got whole cloth into gaming. You know, Roblox is a company that's available and I think matches up really well with the family and kids culture that Disney has had over its long history. You know, I'm a big believer that these primarily single purpose companies, you know, the Foxes, the Paramounts, you know, even the Netflixes and the Warner Brothers Discoveries, you know, they're going to have a very difficult time competing against these multifaceted trillion-dollar flywheels like Amazon and Apple and Microsoft and Google or Alphabet over the next 20 years. These companies invade the media space as a piece of software, losing money to steal market share while they're, you know, infinitely profitable in all these other areas. YouTube is TV is now the fourth largest cable company in the United States. You know, YouTube Premium has 100 million subscribers worldwide. YouTube is the largest channel on connected televisions globally. You know, and Disney, you know, while they have theme parks, now they're dabbling in gaming. They've never had a true gaming strategy up until now. They don't really have a social video strategy that's anything other than promotional. They have no audio strategy. So they're not in any of these other services. And, you know, if the whole business is moving towards direct-to-consumer relationships, which, you know, I think Iger is admitting to a certain extent, I do think you're going to have to create a lifestyle bundle of services in order to capture mind share, wallet share. You know, the reason why I think the stock hasn't moved in a decade is because it's basically the same company it was, you know, 10 years ago with some streaming.
In terms of the emerging market strategy, and I'm in Dubai and big deal in India recently, a merger of Disney with Mukesh Ambani's Reliance and their TV operations. How significant is emerging markets for Disney?
It should be. I mean, you know, they do obviously a huge amount of business in the United States, but their intellectual property is a global phenomenon, unlike almost any other, you know, I would say, you know, not almost, more than any other intellectual property enterprise on the face of the earth. The problem, you know, with how Disney, first of all, Iger way overpaid for Fox, just drastically. And that deal is one of the reasons why I think the company is so stuck. You know, Hotstar seemed like a really good idea, but Disney really demonstrated. And by the way, almost every American company who's tried to invade that space from a media standpoint has failed. Netflix has failed. Disney has failed. You know, I think the lack of understanding these markets, India is a tough one to crack. China is a tough one to crack. But, you know, they should be there. They should be in Africa as well. And I just don't think that Disney understands the consumer base outside of the United States as well as it should. It's a completely different generational makeup, but also the economics of selling media in India are very different from selling them around the rest of the world. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think Disney can ride along with Reliance, who does seem to understand that market very well.
You alluded to this earlier. Disney is tiny compared to the likes of Microsoft and Apple and Google. Could we see Disney swallowed up by one of these tech giants?
And I do think eventually you're going to see, you know, unless something really drastic happens with the makeup of Disney, I think you'll see them sell. And I think eventually you'll see Netflix sell. I think you'll see Spotify sell. I don't see how these companies who are relying on business models, like Spotify is a really good one, never been profitable, you know, relying on business models that are a little bit outmoded, can truly, you know, put up, you know, the resource and bandwidth fight against companies like Amazon, you know, Google in particular. Apple is having a rough, you know, first quarter, but I think, you know, with you know, still over $2.5 trillion in value and, you know, like close to $0.5 trillion of cash on hand, you know, I think Apple really does need to become a buyer. And, you know, the DNA of Apple and Disney are mixed, with Pixar and Jobs is still a major shareholder. But yeah, I definitely think you're going to see these traditional media companies become parts of larger enterprises, whether it's the big tech Death Stars or some other kind of merger and acquisition that could change the shape of it.
A final quick word on a new media company, Trump Media, recently listed in New York, where you are based. And ahead of this interview, I was even thinking, can I ask Evan about this? He's a media guy. Is Trump Media even a media company? Leaving aside the politics, how do you view it?
I mean, I think what was demonstrated by their earnings, I mean, the danger of becoming a public company, like, I just don't think people consider what it means just from a reporting structure. And I think it's very clear that the executives at that media company didn't realize, oh, we have to report earnings now to the public that we're a publicly traded company. And it was such a disaster that they dropped $2 billion in market cap in 3 or 4 days. It's still the most shorted stock on the stock market. So people are betting against this thing. You know, it's a social media platform, you know, with one major user and a bunch of listeners. You know, I think also the fortunes of that company are directly tied to the outcomes of the 2024 election. If Trump becomes president of the United States again, then I think Trump's, you know, Truth Social will have a very bright future. I think if he doesn't, I think it won't exist as a company in 24 months from election day.
The thoughts of Evan Shapiro, media professor in New York. He's also the owner of the Eshap agency, talking about, first of all, Disney. There was that shareholder battle between CEO Bob Iger and the billionaire Nelson Peltz. Bob Iger won that, but share price of Disney. Now, I was looking at the numbers over the past 5 years. Disney share price, $117 yesterday, flat over the past 5 years. S&P 500 has doubled in that time. So there is definitely trouble at mill for Disney. This is the Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8 FM.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.